Hey, ¿qué pasa, Calexico? Welcome back to the podcast. Like always, before we begin, I want to thank a couple of people. First of all, I want to thank Ernie for allowing me to record today here at Meshka Brew Company. Thank you so much for giving me the space. I also want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank my friend Camilo Garcia, Jake, Eric Ortega, Eddie Lopez from Roots Creative, Ms. Norma Serra Galindo, IID Director, representing Division 5 and serving the entire Imperial Valley. Valley Sports, Will Torres from Valley Sports Networks, the Imperial Valley source for sports. I want to thank Eric Reyes from Los Amigos de la Comunidad, empowering communities together. I want to thank Sergio's Tacos and Hot Dogs, 8 years of experience serving the Imperial Valley, San Diego, and Yuma counties with Mexicali-style hot dogs and taquizas. Contact Sergio at 760-562-0057 or look for Sergio's Tacos and Hot Dogs on Facebook. Finally, I want to thank David Gastelum. If you're thinking of buying or selling a home in the Imperial or San Diego counties, make sure you contact David. He's not only a realtor, but an investor with over 20 years of experience, and he'll teach you along the way in one of the most important investments of your life. Contact David at 760-235-9576. Today, we have another candidate. Today, my guest is Mr. Robert Menville. He's running for Imperial County Assessor. Thank you for coming down and talking to us today. Yeah,
thank you very much for inviting me.
Before we get into your campaign and, you know, your platform, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you're somebody that lived in the outskirts of Calexico and, you know, grew up there. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your history here in the Imperial Valley.
Okay. My name is Robert Menville. I was born in Brawley, 1955. I grew up on a farm east of Calexico on Jasper Road. I went through local schools, Jasper Elementary School, and then elementary schools, junior high in Calexico, graduated Calexico High School. 1973, attended Imperial Valley College. I have an Associate Arts degree in business from Imperial Valley College in 1975. Transferred to Cal Poly Pomona and studied agriculture and business there. I have a degree, a bachelor of science degree in agricultural business management. I returned to Imperial Valley after graduation. I worked for the Maggio family, Maggio Incorporated in Hopeville for 2 years, 1978 to 1980. And then 1980 to 1992, I worked for the family farming operation on Jasper Road. In 1992, I went to work for the county assessor's office. And I've been there for 29 and a half years. I served 22 years as a real property appraiser, 1992 to 2014. I ran for assessor in 2014, was elected. 2014, I served first term, was reelected in 2018. I'm finishing my second term and I'm running for reelection again for a third term.
Okay. Can you, in kind of layman's term, can you tell us what the assessor's job is?
The county assessor, there are 58 county assessors in California, one in each county. We're a constitutionally elected official, which means the Constitution requires that every county has an assessor, along with every county has to have a sheriff, elected sheriff, elected district attorney, and elected assessor. So we're one of those three required elected officials on the county level. Assessors are charged with discovering and valuing all privately owned property, real property in a county. We also assess some business property, some personal property, which includes vessels and private aircraft. We maintain the assessment roll, the property tax roll. And that is the record of all values of all properties in the county. We maintain that. And that is what creates an annual property tax bill for each property owner in the county. Now, it's a three-department process. The assessor values property. The auditor controller, they calculate the tax rates and extend those rates, our values, with those rates to create a tax bill. And the bill is actually generated and the tax is collected by the tax collector. So there's three departments that work closely together on the county level. The other things that we do in the office, we receive and apply all legal exclusions and exemptions that are submitted to our office. We review those and then apply those. We maintain the official mailing list for property tax bills. So the official addresses of property owners, we're responsible for keeping that up to date and accurate. We maintain, create and maintain the property maps for the county, cadastral maps. Those are property ownership, property boundaries, and that's all based on recorded documentation that comes to us from the recorder's office. The most important thing we are is we're a resource to the public. We offer the public information on property ownership, property assessments, property characteristics, and property tax laws and property tax rules.
What is like a day-to-day for look like for a county assessor?
Well, every day, you know, we have I have a staff. Currently, we have a funded staff of 20, a permanent staff of 27. When I took office, we had 30 permanent staff, and we've had a reduction in three positions since 2015. But every day, you know, the staff comes in, and we have several sections in the office. We have a mapping and title section. They receive the documents from the recorder's office. Those are the documents we use to update property records and property boundaries. Change of ownership that occurs when a property transfers from one individual to another or one entity to another. And if it triggers a reassessable event, then that information is sent in the form of a work order to the appraisal section. The appraisal section are our appraisers. They value the property, both real property, which is land and structures. We also have an unsecured section that values our business property. That's a different process, how we find that property and how we are notified of where that property is. And then once a value is placed on the property, that property is enrolled in our assessment section, and that becomes part of the assessment role. Now, some of the other support services we provide, and I mentioned before, is we update mailing lists. We're constantly updating address changes that come to us, either from property owners or through the other departments. Tax collector refers a lot of changes to us when they have tax bills that are being returned. And a lot of individuals think that they move and they went to the post office and they have their mail forwarding, or they notified the post office that their address changed, but they forget that they need to notify the individual government agencies, such as the assessor, the register of voters, that I no longer live here, I've moved here, in order to receive their proper documents. And in our case, the tax collector sends tax bills out based on what we have on our address, our official address roll. That assessment section also does the exemptions. Property owners are entitled, in California, entitled to a homeowner's exemption. So we submit those when we have notification of a change of ownership. We submit a letter and a blank form to the homeowner and say, this is your primary residence, you're entitled to this homeowner's exemption. And then when we receive those, we process those, administer those. There's also veterans exemptions, many veterans exemptions, many different types of welfare exemptions that property owners are entitled to. So that section deals with that also. Our title section deals with exclusions. They're a little bit different than exemptions. So there's quite a bit of support services that are involved. We're not just valuing property, we're also providing service to the public on all these other benefits that they may have, exemptions, exclusions, and also we're helping them make sure they're receiving their tax bills timely.
You said you when you first began, it was a staff of 30. Now it's 27. Is it due to the lack of funding, or?
We had in permanent positions, I lost one permanent position. There was a supervisor position. That person left and went to another job. And then the Board of Supervisors decided that that position or part of that position should be in a different department. Mm-hmm. So the funds for that position were moved. And then the other two positions were retirements under the county's retirement incentive program. So those cannot be replaced without the permission of the Board of Supervisors. You have to go to the board and say there's a need to replace those, and this is where I'm going to get the funding from. Funding's another issue. Those positions were, I believe, supposed to be vacant for 5 years in order to, for the county to receive some savings and build up the general fund. So there was, I believe there was 60-some retirements in that program, and those were county employees that had a certain number of years, and the incentive was, I think, they received another year of service time if they retired early. So we had two retirements under that program, and those positions are not funded. I would have to request to have those funded again by the Board of Supervisors. But that's part of the overall county's philosophy right now, to try to reduce spending, because it's been stated that our spending exceeds our revenue countywide, at least the general fund. And so one of the ways they did that was to try to have some of the employees that are higher up on the salary scale retire and then not replace those. So in our case, those haven't been replaced yet.
Do you feel that it's affected, your ability to serve the community?
Well, it's increased the workload in the department. We're still, doing our best to serve, the public, but we've had to move our workload around, and so there's more people. There's less people doing more work, mm-hmm. and that's something that I think the chairman of the board at the CoLab breakfast said we spend more money than we bring in revenue, and we ask our departments to do more with less, and that's not just my situation, that's probably countywide.
In terms of you say your department is gives information to the community.
Yeah, we provide information. Yes.
Do you feel that technology wise, are we up to par where we, other places that do the same thing as the assessor's office does?
Well, there's, that was one of my planks in my platform in 2014, was to increase efficiency, improve productivity through the use of technology and enhanced training. So some of the areas we have improved, I've implemented what's called a computer-assisted mass appraisal. We now, residential property sales, we have what's called a direct enrollment program that we use. So that's, we're using a computer model, a computer program, to look at our property sales as they come through, and if it fits within the parameters of a neighborhood and the sales price, and it gets enrolled without an appraiser having to go out into the field and visit that location and then look at the comparables and write that up. So that's been a time savings. That program probably saves us one appraiser, does the workload of one appraiser. I've implemented what's called a decline in value mass appraisal program for our Prop 8 properties. Prop 8 is a companion of Proposition 13. It was passed in November 1978, and that's for when property values that are under Prop 13, when the market declines like it did during the Great Recession, the assessor is required to look at property values, and if they fall below the Prop 13 factored base year value, then we need to enroll market value when it's lower. So that's what a Prop 8 decline in value is. So we had a great many properties in 2008, 2009 that we reduced values on drastically because of the recession. Mm-hmm. But when I came into office in 2015, we had not, those properties are supposed to be reviewed annually once they go to Prop 8. And we were not doing that because we did not have the technology we needed to do it on a mass scale. So I brought in a program called AES Prop 8 appraisal. It was a Tyler technology system, appraisal evaluation system, Prop 8. And we did mass reviews of property, and we brought those properties back up to where they were either current market in 2015 or to their Prop 13 base year, factored base year. And then we do that every year. Now we've moved away from the AES Prop 8 and gone to a module that's part of our Megabyte property tax system, which is our property administration program. but we use it every year, and that's a requirement of Prop 8. Prop 8 is a constitutional amendment, and it requires that we look at those properties every year. So we do that on a mass basis, and we do not have to have as much person power looking at individual properties. We can do that pretty quickly with our mass assisted appraisal system, our CAMA system, computer assisted mass appraisal. So those are two things. A couple other things I've introduced that are time savers: online business property filing, which allows our business owners to electronically file their annual property statements. Prior to me coming in, everything was done paper. It was all paper filed. Even though the technology was there, it wasn't being utilized. So I've implemented that. And so we have over 50% of our business owners now file electronically. And that's increasing every year. And the business owners and the accountants like that. It's a time saver. And it's very beneficial to the public. The other thing that you talked about, services to the public, our real estate industry is a large user of our property characteristics. They depend a lot on our property records. Mm-hmm. And we keep paper records of each property. And those have been scanned, and we have those in a digital format. So those records, we haven't figured out how to make those available to them online, but there's basic information that they can acquire online now. We have our value notification program that they can look and they can see what the assessed value is. They can see a map of the property. They can see a legal description of the property. They can see the square footage of the land. That's in our value notification. That's a megabyte module. And now recently I've implemented what's called PartialQuest Lite. That's an outside website that you can access through our website, the assessor's website, and they acquire property characteristics from our office, 58 assessor's offices statewide, 58 recorder's offices statewide through First American Title, all the recording data. And so there's a great deal of data that's available there through this PartialQuest Lite, which you go to our website, you click on that, it tells you you're leaving our site, going to another site. But that data comes from our office, and that has things like bedroom count, bathroom count, a square footage of property. It also has our maps available on it, both our partial maps and our Google Maps with our partial superimposed over it. And then you can also go further and find documentation from the recorder's office there. If you need to know the last document recorded, the data was recorded, that information is there. So there's quite a bit of information on our website now that there didn't used to be before I became assessor. And real estate industry is asking for more. I'm working on that with them. There's a full-blown PartialQuest program that I spoke with them yesterday that we're going to arrange to have that demonstrated for them. That's a subscription service. I think that might benefit some of their members, but as an association on a whole, they would contract with the PartialQuest to acquire that information, and that would save us time because that would mean less time that they're asking us to provide records for them. They're going to a third party, and our staff can work on other things besides providing those records. So that's a time savings, a soft savings, as they call it, for our office.
Yeah, and I'm assuming real estate people are the one that use your services.
Yeah, they're a large user of our services.
Yeah.
And they're important, a customer of ours, yes.
This is going to be your third time running for this position.
Yes.
What would you say is a good characteristics for, a good county assessor, or what experience do you need to be a good?
Well, you need to understand that you represent all the property owners and all the business owners in the community, and whoever walks in that door or calls on the phone, they have a question they want answered, or they have a concern that they need taken care of. So the first thing is you have to understand you're accessible to the public. Mm-hmm. You need to be available to them. So I've always said that I'm accessible 24/7, people can call me, contact me wherever they see me, whenever they see me. And I will, if I don't have the answer right then, I'll take the information and I'll have, you know, either myself or someone provide them for the information. So you have to be willing to dedicate that time. I've said I'm dedicated to making sure that assessments are, you know, they're fair, they're accurate, they're equitable, that we follow the law, that, you know, that we're timely on doing our work. And then finally, experience. You need to have experience in that office to understand how government works, how the assessment process works, how the three departments, actually four departments, because it's the recorder also, how we work together. There's people in those departments I've worked with for years, and you have to build that kind of relationship to understand that this, what their job is, what our job is, and how we can work together to better serve the taxpayers. So those are my three main, I think, requirements. You have to be accessible to the public, you have to be dedicated to your job, and you have to have the experience. And I have all three of those. I've always been accessible to the public, dedicated, I'm there every day if I can be, and I have the experience to get the job done. I have got it done, and I'll continue to do it.
Mm-hmm. For other like elected positions, say somebody running for city council.
Yes.
You know, you can kind of like if somebody that's running for re-election, you kind of measure their success as to, you know, what they ran on, you know, their platform.
Mm-hmm.
For a county assessor, it's kind of hard to. What would you say you would measure, you know, success in a county assessor, since it's kind of hard to show the public that, you know, this is.
How do you quantify what we're doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're, you know, number one, we're getting our, you know, every year we get our work done. We've worked through the last 3 years. We've worked through a cyber attack, 2019.
That's true.
That was very challenging.
Yeah.
We still got our assessment roll done. Okay. We got asked for an extension, which is fine. Many counties do. And we finished our assessment roll in 2019. 2020 was the first year of the pandemic. We finished our assessment roll that year, even though we had a little bit disorganized in March and April of 2020 because the county said, send everybody home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, we're going to have most of the staff work remotely. Well, we had to gear up for that. We had to find equipment, and everybody had to gear up to doing that. Once we got working and everybody got into a routine, then we worked pretty well remotely offsite. And I had probably 60-65% of the staff working remotely offsite from whenever we got going in April 2020 through July of 2021. So that, you know, it worked pretty well. We finished our tax rolls every year. We turned them over. And, you know, this year we're going to complete our assessment roll. And it's grown every year. We're over $14 billion total assessment roll last year. It'll continue to grow. So we've benefited from a good economy. Since I've been in, the economy's been, the real estate economy has been positive,
mm-hmm.
and continue to grow every year. Property values are getting high. We have high inflation in the country now. Interest rates are rising. That's going to slow down purchasing. So those are all kind of signs that things are going to slow down. We may be, you know, getting close to another recession.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through several cycles in real estate in my 29 years in the office. And real estate is cyclical. It goes up, it comes down, it goes up. But we hope that this time it's kind of a dip and not a drastic drop like we had in 2008, 2009. But you always have to work forward, look forward, project, you know, what do we have to look for? And that's one of the things I'm looking for now is, okay, what is our housing market doing? Are we going to have to start looking at decline in values in some of these residential areas that have sold, properties have sold high? Are we going to start seeing that market level off and drop off? So you always have to be kind of looking ahead, and the market tells us that. We don't make the make up the market. The buyers and sellers in the market are telling us what it is, and we have to follow that, look at that information, and then follow where it's taking us. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but I mean, we complete our assessment roll every year, and that assessment roll turns into a tax bill, property tax bill that goes out for every property, privately owned property. Also all the unsecured, that's properties such as the business property, some of the possessory interests, which are private interest and government property. We get that that roll done. The auditor controller does their extension, which is they calculate what the taxes are going to be on each one of those properties. And then the tax collector sends the bills out, and then we collect the money. And we're about ready to start another cycle. The last tax payment was in April for real property. And now we're trying to get our roll closed by June 30th, which is the end of our fiscal year, so that that whole process can start again. So that's how almost every assessor's office measures what they do by, we need to close the tax roll.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure our assessments are accurate and timely, and we get our roll closed on time.
Yeah, it's a kind of like a, you know, how would I say? Like it's really plain and simple. You know, the way you know doing your job is just like, you know, you can say you turn in your taxes, and you know that's pretty much.
Well, it takes a lot of people for that tax bill that you receive. That property tax bill you receive, there's quite a few people involved with that. So it's not just the assessor, it's not just the auditor controller, it's not just the treasurer tax collector, it's all the staff and the clerk recorder, all those four departments working together. And they all have a part to play in that tax bill that goes out in late August or early September every year that homeowners or property owners receive. So there's a lot of work that goes into it. There's a lot of people involved with it. And so, you know, but those are the people that make it happen. The department director, like myself, I mean, we're just directing, making sure we're moving in the right direction. And then we're communicating with the public, like I am now, saying, okay, this is what we do, because you really don't know what we do, and you don't think about us until you receive that tax bill. And then that's when you think about us.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like you know, up to recently, I didn't really know what the county assessor did. I mean, obviously, I mean it says it in the name, you know, you assess something, right? But we really don't know exactly what and how. And
well, many people think we're the, and they call us the tax assessor, and we don't like to be called the tax assessor, because we don't tax people. We assess property. We value property for property tax purposes. And the tax bill itself is kind of it's the work of several departments to come up with that tax bill. So, but we are the agency that we value property, but we also do other things. And I talked about that earlier, the mapping, the address list, the exemptions, the exclusions. There's other services that we provide, the resource to the public. But our main reason for existing is, and that's why, probably why it's a constitutionally elected officer, is, you know, the founding fathers of California said that there needs to be someone that's going to bring in revenue to fund county operations. And that's why there's an assessor, and it's a constitutionally erected an office. And that's my understanding of what the thinking was way back in the 1800s when the Constitution was written.
Yeah, which is,
and that position is independent, and you don't have a board of supervisors saying, hey, we need taxes raised for a special project. And you have an independent assessor that says, well, the tax law says this, and I have to follow the tax law. I can't do something because somebody has a special project that they want funded.
Yeah.
So that's the independent part of being elected.
So the revenue that you guys get because of tax collecting is used for the county's operations?
Well, probably on property taxation, probably about 80% goes to education. It goes to wherever your property is located. You're in a school district. You're probably in multiple school districts. You probably have an elementary school district and a high school district. And you have a community college district, because Imperial Valley College covers the whole county. So you have multiple school districts. Probably about 80% of property taxes go to various school districts or various educational. The other, 20% goes to either special assessments, or if you're in the county area, outside the city limits, that's going to go to the county general fund. If you're in the city, let's say the city of El Centro, then part of that's going to go to the city general fund, and part of it's going to go to the county general fund. There's an allocation there. So education benefits a great deal from property taxation.
Okay, I didn't know.
So that's how your schools are funded. Whatever the shortfall is made up by the state of California. And that's, school funding is very complex. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on that. Sometimes you look on your tax bill and there's general obligation bills on there. There's for that of the voters in that school district have voted in. And those are in addition to your 1% under Prop 13. But a lot of times those are what funds new construction or rehabilitation of structures in the schools, various projects. Those are general obligation bonds, and those are voted on locally by that district. So, but under state tax law, under Proposition 13, taxes are 1% of your full cash value. Your assessed value. And your assessed value is set when you acquire the your base year is set when you acquire that property, or you construct something new on that property. That's when your base years are set. And it stays that way except for the 2% factoring that goes up every year under Prop 13. And then the tax rate is 1% of that. So, but everybody says, well, my tax rate's more than 1%. Well, that's because you have these add-on general obligation bonds or special assessments that have been voted on by the local districts and added on.
Yeah, in Calexico we have two bonds.
Right? Yeah, several. Mm-hmm. Some school districts have several, and I've received calls, and they think, well, there's one for each school in my district. No, the school board has presented their needs, and it's gone to the voters, and maybe they wanted to just raise a little bit of money at a time, so they do it in increments. So every district's a little different how they've gone for their general obligation bonds. But again, I'm not an expert on school funding, but people see that on their tax bill and they sometimes wonder, well, I thought I only paid 1%, but these other obligations have been voted on over time, and they've become part of your that's part of the calculation the auditor controller does. They have to collect all those, what each district needs to pay to pay those bond obligations, and then that is converted into a tax rate, and then that tax rate times our value equals the tax bill for your property.
Yeah.
So it's a rather complex process.
Yeah.
So
so we're at 34 minutes more or less.
Okay.
Can you give us your elevator pitch, 2-minute pitch, why people should elect you as a county assessor?
Okay. Well, I'm going to continue the next 4 years to modernize the office with technology. There's I think the days in our county of where we're going to hire more people to do the work are something that we're not going to see. The county has said that, the general fund needs to be, the revenue needs to exceed expenses. People can't keep coming and saying, I need this, I need that, and it comes out of the general fund. So they're asking us as department directors to do more with less. Well, okay, that means we're going to have to use technology and automation to do our job. So I'm going to continue with that, looking at ways that we can automate our office. The clerk recorder is moving towards auto indexing of documents, and then electronic recording later this year. And that, I'm waiting for them to complete that process. And then we receive documents from them. There's an optical character reading program that I've been looking at that I think would automate our title examination process. It would save a great deal of time. It would speed up our title examination. And so I'm looking at implementing that in our next term after the recorder has done their automated automation process. So that's a specific example of what I'm doing. The real estate industry, they want to have more access and 24/7 access to property characteristics. So I'm going to be working with them to find solutions to that. I mentioned that earlier. Mm-hmm. The full PartialQuest subscription, even though that would not be part of our office, it's something that I'm going to work with them to see if that will help them. The big issue that's coming up, and you hear it everywhere, is lithium. Mm-hmm. The Board of Supervisors is kind of tying the future of this county to lithium development, and you can't go anywhere or read a newspaper without seeing something about lithium. Well, the impact on our office is we're going to be asked to assess, value those projects that are being built, the geothermal plants that are being developed, which from those geothermal brines, they're going to extract that lithium. There's going to be a lot of property, a personal property and equipment that's facilities that are constructed. So we have to figure out how to value that. The county needs that revenue because, you know, obviously our population is increasing. The census may not have shown that because the census was probably inaccurate due to COVID. But I mean, I can drive here on a Friday afternoon like yesterday and tell you that our population's increasing, the traffic's increasing. More people means more services. There's a demand for services. In order for the county and the cities to provide those services, they're gonna need revenue. And part of that revenue comes from property taxes. So we need to make sure that our assessment of these lithium operations, properties, excuse me, it needs to be accurate. It needs to be done correctly. And so I have to figure out where do we find the expertise to do this? This is kind of a new frontier for us. Yeah. Another area is that we're seeing coming down the pipeline is battery storage facilities, because your photovoltaic solar energy generation systems, that's a daytime energy producer. Mm-hmm. It's not baseline power. Wind is the same way. At night, sometimes the wind stops blowing. At night, they're not generating solar. So to make that base load power, they want to install battery storage, and then that power can go to those batteries, be stored, and then when the demand peaks after 5 o'clock, when everybody goes home and turns on their television and starts cooking, there's a demand for power, and then they can pull it out of those batteries, put it on the grid, and send it where they want. Well, there's 6 proposals coming down the pipeline for battery storage here. And, you know, we're looking at them now. And what one of the things we're looking at is we have to assess these. And we're going to need somehow either, if we're not going to be allowed to hire staff, we're going to need expertise from somewhere, or we're going to need to find a computer program that's going to assist us in this. And there's going to need to be some kind of revenue for that. And that revenue should come from the developers who are developing these projects. That should be part of their development agreement or their conditional use permit, that they're going to fund, just like they're going to fund fire protection, and they're going to need to fund police services for their facilities. They're going to need to fund what we do to assess those properties, because otherwise we're dependent on the general fund. And the general fund is overcharged right now. Mm-hmm. So those are some things that I'm going to be dealing with in my next term. And they're important to the county, very important to the Board of Supervisors, because they've kind of hung the future of the county is being basically said it's lithium.
Yeah.
Our future is lithium. And that's my part in it, because I have to make sure that we can assess those properties. We can make sure the county and the school districts and the special districts are receiving the revenue that they need and they should receive. And that's my job, and I have the experience and the knowledge to get the job done.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing today with us today, you know, your experience, your story, you know, how the things you've done as a county assessor, and what you would continue to do if you win this election.
Okay.
And, you know, nothing but luck on your campaign. Do you have social media or anywhere where people can follow?
We have a Facebook page, Robert Menville, County Assessor 2022. Mm-hmm. And then I have my personal page. I've been putting information there.
Okay. So I'll get those from you and I'll put them on the description of the episode so people can click on it and go check it out.
Very good.
All right.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you very much, Jose. We met a couple of Fridays ago at mm-hmm. Calexico Brewery at an event there, and then appreciate you making this available for me. I think it's an important service. I will throw my pitch in for elections. Local elections are important, but they're down ballot races. If you look at your ballot, your ballots came in the mail, and uh-huh. you look at this thing, and you have to look quite a ways to find these elections that are local, because it's crowded with candidates for governor and senator and everything else. So it's important that you vote your entire ballot, because this whole first page has to do with state and federal elections. You have to go to this second page.
Oh, wow, there's a second one?
Yeah, there's a second page. And you got to go way over here. And there they are on the fourth page are all your local elections, which are the most important ones.
Yeah, and it's crazy. I mean, you would think that they would put your local, there would be some way where you would put local elections first and then.
Yeah, but anyway. I'm not the elections official. I don't know why, but way over here on the fourth page are all your local.
Yeah.
Local, the important positions that affect your everyday life are on page four.
On the last page.
So, yeah, last page. It's a down ballot race. Vote the entire ballot.
Yeah, make sure to, look through front and back.
Look at that whole ballot and, vote. That's the other thing. This is your opportunity to have a say-so and who's going to be there to run your local governments and your local water district ID, your board of supervisors, some of those districts are on, your county elected officials are all on there, mm-hmm. Your school superintendent's on there. So they're important, and it's important you go all the way through that ballot and look at that last page.
Yeah, for sure.
There's my pitch to vote. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you once again. All right, guys, thank you so much for watching or listening. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.